It's Friday, May 31st, 2013, and welcome to episode 151 of Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom.
I'm Cindy Rich.
I'm Mike Joya.
Welcome to Tech Talk for Teachers, the show about teaching and learning with technology. Today, we've got a broad variety of topics. One of the big things in the news this month is Google. Google had an event called Google I.O., so we spent a little bit of time talking about that. Mike, I think you and I are going to talk a little bit about Xbox.
Yes.
And see if we're going to be the new owners of an Xbox around Christmas season. So we'll go back and forth on that a little bit. And then also, Mike, I think you're going to talk a little bit about ransomware.
Yes.
One of the things that I think is increasing out there, and we need to really educate ourselves, not only about phishing, but this ransomware topic that seems to be getting a little bit more popular in the news. And then, Cindy, we're going to talk a little bit and have a technology pick of the week. I think you've got something for kids this time for your tech picks.
Something during the summer. We'll redirect a little bit, and instead of usual classroom stuff, just something for parents to maybe.
Okay, so welcome, set back, and here we go. Things this month was Google had a conference called Google I.O. and they released a lot of new features available in Google. One of the things that I think Google is trying to do is unify all of their accounts together. So we've talked in the past, you know, we lost Google Reader, and I think that's officially dead next month in June. But they're trying to really concentrate on their core. And one of the things that they're really pushing people to is what they call their Google Plus. And if you are a Gmail user, you've probably been seeing this for some time. But with the conference this month, they released a lot of new things. And one of the things, I've got my Google account open here, my Gmail account. And, you know, flat design's the big new thing. I don't know if you've been reading in the trade press about flat design. Windows 8's kind of a flat design. Google is rearranging. They call theirs cards. You know, Microsoft kind of has the tiles concept. Next month, we'll be talking probably about WWDC. Apple's big conference is coming up next month. Supposedly, they're redesigning iOS, so we'll see what the new version of it looks like. But I've been seeing rumors about flat design with it as well. So I've opened up my Google account, and like I said, they're trying to unify everything together. So in your Gmail account, if you look up in the upper left-hand corner, for example, mine says Plus Tom, so that's my Google Plus account. And if I go there, right underneath the little Google Plus symbol, there's a little icon with a pull-down menu, and I'm going to go over to photos. I don't have a ton of photos, but one of the neat things that Google announced just recently was contextual search. So if I go out here in my Google Plus account and type in, I'm going to type in the word deer because I have a couple of pictures of deer out in the field. And if I do a search, it will go through all of my folders and boom, in less than a second, here's two pictures of deer out in the field. That is contextual search in an image with no metadata.
Yeah.
It's recognizing this.
That'd be great.
So, you know, it's one of those things, it's kind of those unintended consequences out there. Let me just do another one. I don't have a ton of photos out in my Google account, but I was just playing around with this and type in the word barn. So here's a couple of old farm buildings. And then if you don't find, you know, something within your photos in Gmail, it says more from your circles. Now, I do follow several photographers. So here's like all of the different people in my circles, pictures of what it finds for barn. Or let me go back here.
So it's only searching within your files.
It will do either way. You can do by default whenever you go into Google Plus and click on photos. Yeah, that's not a barn. That's a castle, wasn't it?
But you were searching deer. So that was even
better. Let me go back up here to photos. So here we go. And it's not perfect by any means, but see, it says it was just searching for me, photos from my library.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
And then hear more from your circles. We've had this ability, of course, Google's, you know, with Google Images and things, but I've always thought that's been tied to the metadata, to the content, the way right. that you tag your photos and things. So this is kind of neat. And I don't have a ton of things out there. And again, I'm not sure how I feel about this, because if you make your photos public out there, other people within, you know, your Google circles in this case would be able to find it. So I just did a search for clouds, and I've got a couple pictures of sky and clouds here. Let's do more from my circles and all kinds of different things. And like I said, it's not perfect. You know, you'll get some different ones. I think I've got some sunsets in here. So do a search for sunset from my photo library. There's like three pictures. They've also added some auto correcting, which is really nice. I think they're really, you know, this operating system, you can go in here and do touch-ups. There's something called auto enhance, which it's been in the photo editor for a while. But if I go out here, I can come out here, do my different edits and things. I haven't played around with it, but there's some other features out there that'll do automated or animated GIFs. So if you do like a burst mode in your, you know, photos of something moving, it would put together a little animated GIF or GIF, however you pronounce it.
Well, the creator says it's GIF.
So yes, that was another article in the news that came around this time. It is so GIF.
You know.
Yes. So I've heard it pronounced both ways over the years. So I usually say both in that way. I'm right half the time.
What I find interesting about this in Google in general, as being an iPad owner and an iPhone owner,
mm-hmm.
And not you know a Surface Pro or something like that, is I was able to use the Google Drive, in one of my classes that was using PowerPoint, and I don't have the Office suite on my iPad because it's like $50 or $60.
Right.
It's like full price. But if I load it into my Google Drive, it will open it. It will open any Microsoft document
I guess it would be Google Presentations technically or whatever.
It just opened it up, but probably yes. Mm-hmm. And I can make it available offline. So it was a tool for me to use to view a Microsoft thing. And then I don't have to print it out either. So there's that cost too,
mm-hmm.
Which is great. And it just made me think of that when you were doing the, mm-hmm. you had the auto touch up with your photos and things like that.
Yeah, you could also use the free, Microsoft has the Office web apps, which is, you know, completely free. Again, with all, we were talking a little bit before the show started, you know, you've got Google, you've got Apple, and you've got Android, and we mm-hmm. basically represent a pretty good cross section because I'm doing some of the Windows side more, probably a little bit more now. You're doing a lot of the Apple, the iPhone, iPad, and Cindy, you've got
the Droids,
and I've used all three in the past as well. But it's interesting just kind of seeing the way things evolve, and it's like this flat design, you know, like when Windows 8 came out, it's like, oh, you know, what are they doing with all that? And the next thing you know, everybody's out there doing it. So it's kind of the flavor of the month or whatever. We were talking about syncing things up. That's one of the problems because the companies sometimes don't get along so good together because it's a competitive environment. We were just playing around with OneNote and, you know, the things that I can see, I have full capability because it's a Microsoft product on this Surface Pro, but we're just playing around with the Android app and the iPhone app, and there's some limitations out there with that. And then, like, on Apple with Safari, I don't even know. I mean, you know, there's some spats going back and forth with Google and some things it can do and some things it can't.
Yeah, I mean, it's the mobile version of Google is pretty harsh. I think on the iPhone, it's very different. Now, am I... iPad, it's the same web version as you would see on any PC, but
so a lot of different functionality in the iPhone versus the iPad.
Yeah, because it's more, the iPad will more navigate on non-mobile sites. It'd be more of the traditional sites than it would be on your iPhone, which goes straight to the mobile setup.
Mobile Safari using that, and then
any, like, if I go to eiu.edu, my iPhone will go straight to the mobile website. But
as does the Droid.
But on my iPad, it will go to the regular website.
Right.
That's good.
Or at least give you a choice.
Right.
And sometimes ask you.
Yeah, that's that user agent that's going out there, you know, trying, whenever you get there as part of the header information, it'll go out there and say, hey, what kind of browser, you know, mm-hmm. do you want to deliver on? And the Surface Pro, of course, it's Windows, so it's getting the full, you know, the full site view out there. Although I was using, what was I using the other day that I thought it should have brought up the full, it was my Android tablet. But it brought up the mobile site. I think Android's kind of notorious for that. They think it's a mobile operating system. So right. even though it was a 10-inch tablet, it still brought up, you know, the mobile, which isn't a big deal because the way we have our EIU, you just click, you know, show full size. It's just inconvenient to have to do that.
Right. Now, on thinking about your pictures, do you have pictures saved in a lot of different places?
Yeah.
Or do you try to keep them all?
Well, no, I kind of have a central store. Yeah, that's kind of like my home base, and then I'll farm out, you know, for demo types on these different platforms and things. I'll just farm out just a few of them. But I've always had the philosophy with this cloud computing and everything, and I don't think everybody shares this. I like to have things in my control, so local. I will keep that local copy, and then I will upload. So, you know, worst thing happens out there in the cloud and things. I still have my local copy.
Yeah,
now, people are starting to reverse that and say, well, the cloud's safer than it is local.
It depends. As a security guy, I get a little twitchy when you start using, like, Dropbox and any of those cloud-based devices, even like Google Drive, because, like, Dropbox will store your information wherever it has the most room in all its data centers. Well, its data centers is Google. It will use places in the Netherlands, all across the world, to house your information. Now, if it's sensitive or personal, very private to you, it could be stored in some, you know, some data storage center in Europe or in the Middle East or somewhere.
And probably if you inquired saying, hey, where is this photo of this sunset? They probably couldn't tell you.
I mean,
and it might change two or three times by the time they got the answer if they're doing some of this.
Right. And Dropbox encrypts when you load things into them, but they still have a method of unencrypting it because they're the ones in charge of the encryption of it as opposed to yourself. So in worst case, they can always unencrypt and see what's...
Right.
What's in there? You can't ensure security through them.
I print a lot of my stuff through Shutterfly and Snapfish and things like that, and they let you upload and create albums. And I was because I was thinking about the people in the tornado in Oklahoma that lost so many of their photos and things like that.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I really hope some of them have access to those, that they can get them reprinted and things. But I don't have all of them on there, and I really need to come up with a plan because I have some here, some there, you know, and they're just kind of scattered. Again, like we talked about, the different places we keep things and do things.
That was another announcement Google made. They're giving up to 15 gigabytes free now for their Google Drive. So, I mean, those storage, that's a lot of space. I saw Flickr went to 1 terabyte earlier this month. So Yahoo's really stepping it up with Flickr trying to know, entice some users over there.
Right. And it's interesting you talk about the Oklahoma, the tornadoes in Oklahoma. It's almost, you know, here as a university, we have to have a disaster recovery plan for our IT systems with backups to the point where we need to have a remote site in case of total
destruction
or annihilation of the campus. We can get back up and running, and all our records and data is stored somewhere else. They're almost to the point where, as an individual, you need that too.
Yes.
You know, when I was in the military for 7 years, it was basically three method backup. You kept a local copy of it. You have your usable copy, and then you kept an offsite copy, which was probably located at a different installation somewhere in the world. And that's how you made sure your data was all backed up.
So like I said, over the years, that's kind of the philosophy. You have that local copy. Of course, you have an offsite, you know, that's your backup. So that's really a second copy. And then if you're uploading to the cloud for some of those other services, but everybody, at least in the circles that I follow, people are so comfortable and think that nothing can go wrong, you know, in the cloud. And a cloud is a computer too, and things can go wrong. And, you know, I see it on my Twitter stream sometimes. It's like, Gmail's down, you know, it'll be down for like 2 minutes.
and you think
the end of the world is coming. But one of these days there will be some major event or something that really, really impacts it. It's, you know, it's not magic. It's all out there, you know, all this physical space and things, and it can happen to anyone at any time.
Right. And that's what you and I were talking about earlier. I heard the report that our IQ points are dropping as a, I don't know if that's just United States or everywhere, but they were saying that, you know, each decade it's going down, and they wonder how much of it is because we're not internalizing information, right, but we're internalizing the skills to go locate information, right, elsewhere.
That was another discussion of things that, you know, every now and then you see an article says Google making us stupid. And you've probably seen some articles like that. And then in my Twitter network, I've seen a couple of things. Do you know, as teachers, it's like, are we doing a disservice to our students? And this conversation went on the past couple of weeks. Are we doing a disservice to our students for making them memorize things when they say, well, our students are going to have a cell phone? And but there are, in my opinion, on that is there are certain facts and things that you have to have as building blocks to knowledge that you have to have there for your immediate retrieval. And what you said, you know, are we getting, you know, our IQ points going down because we're not, as you say, internalizing, right, so much of that.
It's just like my background, you know, is in reading and language arts. There are still spelling rules, mm-hmm, that we need to be teaching students and phonetics and things like that. And people are like, oh, no, spell check will correct it. And it's like, but we still need to learn I before E except after C.
Yeah, even the English language itself is not like which is which.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, and there, and you know, Microsoft Office and spell check doesn't catch those things.
Right.
Sometimes they will. But it doesn't always catch those things.
Right. So, your and like your.
Effect and effect. It, mm-hmm, it doesn't know the difference.
Right.
Because I don't think most people know when to
effect
use those.
Effect and effect. No. Yeah. In fact, I'm going to embarrass myself here, but that was in the title of my dissertation. I changed it to impact because so many people questioned me. Uh-huh. So instead of the effect on, uh-huh, I said the impact on because, yep, I got that question more than anything else, yeah, from everybody.
Which one? And it's not that they're picking on you. They're just like, are you sure it's that one?
Yeah.
And then the next person's like, are you sure it's that,
yeah,
one?
Uh-huh. Yeah. So anyway, Google had a lot of things going on this month, and we'll go ahead and wrap up this portion. We're talking a little bit earlier, the Xbox One event.
Get me all fired up about it.
I thought we'll just save this for on air here today.
When I'm out of town, you boys can discuss that one.
Well, it's going to be, I'm guessing, that I would hope that this would be out by November for the holiday season.
Oh, I'm sure it will be Black Friday, maybe.
Probably coming out. But mm-hmm, just quickly, to revamp what was going on. Xbox has what's been like 8 years or so since the original version came out.
8 or 7.
They
second version.
360, however 360. We want to define this. And Mike's obviously an Xbox person here, so we're going to get into this here a little bit. But yeah, they come out with the new, it's an x86 platform, so they're making the switch from a PowerPC chip to the x86 chip. Mm-hmm. I read that's like 40 times more powerful than the Xbox 360.
Yeah, I think it's like Core 6, I don't want to say 8 gigs of RAM, 500 gigs of storage, mm-hmm, memory,
wow,
storage. Pretty powerful. It'll be a big upgrade for the Xbox.
Yeah. So I'm saving my pennies for the November time frame. Mike said he's not going to.
It depends. Like my question I asked you earlier is, are you a gamer? And you said kinda. And I think that's what's enticing is the not hardcore gamers is this platform from the initial release. Now, we have to wait till E3 to see if they do a big presentation on the games that they're going to provide.
E3 is going to be all about games. They're holding back, and I can see where you would probably be disappointed in the first one. What caught my attention was all the cool technology coming out with the Kinect and the voice commands and all of that.
Sure, but I'm buying it. See, to me, I'm buying a gaming platform. Mm-hmm. I'm not buying a media platform.
Yeah.
And besides, I'm still going to need my cable box. Mm-hmm. To run, and so the whole cool TV features is kind of a wash because you're still going to need to have your cable box on your system.
Yeah, so it's got an HDMI pass through, so they're going to be able to overlay, and with voice commands, you can say "watch ESPN."
Sure,
it immediately.
How lazy!
It's pretty cool.
No, we don't even want to use one finger to change.
I know.
Channel.
I'm back in the
remember
day
when
I
used to have to
exactly.
Remember when we were our parents' remote control?
Yes, that's that. I remember.
Well, you still had to fine tune your VHF signal and mm-hmm. your UHF
signal.
Yeah,
I'm gonna say not only that, but you had to hold your arm out, say "okay, over here." point this way.
High tech was the antenna turner, the automatic antenna turner.
Yeah. But you know, it's got built-in Skype and things coming up, so it's going to be doing some multitasking and, you know, integrated. I'm sure it's probably going to have some SkyDrive functionality. It's an entertainment device, but turning away from the gaming community. Yeah. I think they're turning away from the gaming community.
Which, I mean, I guess, I don't know how I feel about that, because it's
well, I think the gaming community, where a lot of people are migrating to, are these mobile apps, which aren't probably in your and I sense of the word of gaming. That's not gaming.
No, no, and I get the point. Like either way, like I have a media PC at home, and I built it myself. And it runs Whisper Quiet, and it's just for media. It's just to watch movies and videos, and that's all it's for. You know, it's a powerful device. It looks like a stereo receiver. It doesn't look like a computer at all. But, you know, on the flip side is I don't want to buy another media device because I have one. Mm-hmm. And if I'm going to buy an Xbox, I'm going to buy a gaming console. Now, we could go the other way, because PC games, if you have the very expensive graphics card and you're liquid cooling your computer and have all this RAM and all that stuff, you know, the games are going to look better and they're going to perform better on a PC than on the Xbox.
But you're spending $1,500, $2,000 ballpark for that versus a $500 Xbox One.
And the other thing that I wasn't pleased with is it's not backwards compatible.
Yeah.
So I've spent thousands of dollars in this on the 360, and over the course of 7 years, and you may be thousands of dollars. How lame are you? But 7 years, that's, you know, $60 a game.
It all adds up. Yeah,
it adds up.
Yeah, justify
but,
it.
But go now ahead. I still have to maintain that separate box if I ever want to play those games.
Yep.
And the whole reason I got the Xbox 360 was my best friend from college. He lives in Boston, but we still communicate over Xbox Live.
Yeah, it's
and
a cool
we
platform.
We play games together and all that type of stuff.
I was going to say, what do you play?
I play Gears of War. I play the Call of Duties. I'm kind of...
They shut off the new Call of Duty.
Yeah, they did. A few scenes of it. Mm-hmm. Quite interested in that. Assassin's Creed, just because I like that one. You don't so much network with other people to play, but it's pretty interesting with all the stealth moves. I'm pretty open to play a lot of the first-person shooters and kind of hacker-slasher games.
Right.
I'm not real big into like the sports or racing games.
Yeah. But it's going to be the next evolution, the next generation of the Xbox. And, you know, what does this have to do with teaching and learning and all of that? Many of your K-12 students are, you know, are avid gamers out there playing.
Right.
And they have this technology available to them in their living room. And then we bring them into the classroom and it's like, you know, how do you compete for...
And they're comfortable communicating with someone that they've never seen.
Yeah.
And that over electronic mediums, where the teachers, sometimes we're not. And so that feels really strange for us. And they're completely comfortable with it. So things like the Skyping for
virtual... Well, this is a big deal. And it's like, I do this every night.
Oh, yeah. Virtual field trips and things like that are nothing to them.
Right.
Because they've been doing things like this almost their whole lives now.
So in the systems... The PS3 was very powerful when it came out. In fact, even the government was using them. If you linked a lot of them, you could turn them into supercomputers for processing.
Mm-hmm.
One of the universities used it. If you weren't using your PS3, you could connect to their system, and they would use it to do protein folding for their research. So they were networking all these PS3s, these computing power across the whole world to do research and academic research, and not just, you know, military research or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's pretty interesting how powerful, and I'd be interested to see what type of tools you may have with the Xbox
One for that
purpose.
The other aspect, the Kinect with the 3D gestures and things. I'll provide a link in the show notes to the demo. But, you know, basically moving your hand to do swipes and things around, and the voice commands.
It's cool and all, but it's always on. So
yes,
Microsoft always has a
Xbox off.
An eye in your living room.
A view, unless you unplug your
And they don't on your cell phone, so.
Yeah.
With your webcams and everything else going on. So it's kind of a wait and see, but that was definitely a big event. Next month, we'll probably be talking a little bit about Apple's WWDC, Worldwide Developers Conference, and at the end of the month, I think, is Microsoft's Build. So. And E3 is the end of the month, too, isn't
it? Right,
it
should be.
So,
and
summertime. ISTE is coming up. I think it's down in San Antonio at the end of the month. I'm not going to be able to make it, but I know a lot of people that I follow on my network will be down there, so I'll be following it online doing that. So always always a lot of things going on in the summertime, trying to refresh and revamp. So we'll leave it there, and we'll go on to the next segment. Another one of the items that caught my interest this month was ransomware, and I've been noticing it seems like there's been an increase, an uptick in some of the ransomware activities. I've been seeing some things online about it. So I thought I would ask Mike if, you know, what he's been seeing out there and some of the ways that we can protect ourselves.
Sure. Ransomware, again, is another type of confidence scheme that they're used almost along the same lines as phishing, except this one's directly targeted to make money as opposed to maybe trying to get into a system and steal state secrets or something like that. What will happen is all of a sudden you'll be browsing the web, and it could be very legitimate sites. It could not be shady sites, or it could be. And all of a sudden your screen will flash open and completely locked. There'll be no browser windows. There'll be nothing. And usually it says something like, this is from the FBI, and you've been identified as viewing pornography or some type of thing to really get your heart rate elevated.
Right.
And then it takes over your complete control of your computer, locks it out. Basically, the only thing you can do is turn it off. You can't do Control-Alt-Delete and get to your,
tasks.
Task manager to shut it off that way. And it's a scam. It's a 100% scam. If the FBI is ever going to arrest you, you're not going to know until it happens. They'll say, like, we can remove all these charges if you pay this fine. Immediately, we'll unlock your computer and drop all charges if you pay $200. You know, click here to do that. And, of course, it's obviously a scam. It's basically a virus that they have, some type of malware they have put on your computer. Because if you were to turn your computer off and turn back on, it'll load up again right away. Some of it's pretty sophisticated to where if you had a webcam on your monitor or on the side or something, sometimes they'll take a picture of you.
Oh, no way.
And it'll pop it right up on the screen, and you'll be like, oh, they've got me. You know, they're in complete control of my computer. Mm-hmm. It's really just a program running. We've seen it on campus. Looking at a local restaurant, searching a local restaurant.
Wow.
And got hit with it. The person was terrified. They didn't know what to do. Of course, they did the right thing, and they came and got me. and we took care of it from there. Basically, what you have to do is load the computer up in safe mode and run malware bytes, which is maybe what I'll use for my tech pick of the week. And that program will clean up your computer and get it back to where it needs to be.
So was it on that restaurant site, or was it somewhere else that they...
It depends. It could have been that site was compromised. It could have been a man in the middle where it intercepted the request for that page.
So you have no idea where it's coming from.
Yeah, a lot of times on those particular sites, they have like ad agencies and things pulling in from all kinds of different sites and things.
And like I said, if you see it, it can get your heart rate elevated, even as a security guy. And it didn't happen to me as my browsing. I just came up and saw it. I was like, wow, this is bad. But again, you just, with any of these things, it's confidence schemes, and you just need to relax and be like, look at it, this is not what's happening. Or talk to someone. If you're unsure, I'm sure someone knows someone that's good with technology. If you're unsure what's going on.
But is it on the increase?
I think it is, because it's a way to make money. A lot of people probably fall victim from it because they're playing on your emotions.
Right. It's kind of the old pyramid scheme or something. If only 1 or 2% of people fall for that, that's a lot of money still.
Right.
So.
Right.
I'm thinking employers scare them straight, because they'll never do any shopping online or anything again, because they just the idea that, because I'm sure people who've never done anything inappropriate, that pops up and you think, oh my gosh, one time I accidentally got on this site or something like that.
Yeah, or and there's a lot of misdirection even in the adult industry. There's a lot of misdirection that someone that doesn't isn't well educated in this area would fall victim to, even though that's completely accidental.
Right.
Yeah. But it is on an uptick, like I said, because it is a money-making way. I know we in our IT department, our help desk will help clean up people's machines that fall victim from it. And one person that mainly does it says he's seen a lot more recently this past semester.
Wow.
Yeah. So something to be aware of out there. And like I said, kind of the education is kind of your best protection out there.
Right. Then, and even on our security page in our training and education section, we have a whole web page dedicated to ransomware.
We'll make sure we'll put a link in the show notes for that.
And review it and protect yourself from it.
Yeah. And it kind of goes back to what we talked about on a previous episode, you know, the security is everyone's responsibility and going out there and, you know, and taking care of it, because you may think that it's only affecting you, but, you know, like blocking the phishing scams and some of that.
So. And, you know, these major security concerns, like illegal downloading and getting notified, stuff that would involve law enforcement, that stuff's still going to happen very manually. That's going to happen through serving official documentation at your door, through certified regular mail. It's not going to happen through email. Yeah. Of course, that time may come when it does happen that way, but it's still all that scare tactics is going to be very official if it is the real thing.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll put a link out in the show notes for that. So thank you. My technology pick of the week this week is a OneNote template that is about traveling. And I'm going to select this one. We've been doing a lot more with OneNote. And this one is a template that's provided for free, and I'll provide a link in the show notes. But this one's kind of about a travel itinerary, and it's just a good way to go out there. Maybe something practical over the summertime if you're planning a trip or something. It's a notebook, and then each section across the top, it kind of has your trip book, top 10 places to visit, research, schedule, and a little journal section. And these are all, as I said, just basically an empty template. But you can go out there and use this. And, for example, in the journal, it's got like day one, day two, day three, so you can type your notes and things out there. You can add pictures. It's kind of got some little hints and tips out there. If you want to record audio in a picture, one of the applications that this template has is it suggests that you insert a picture. So, you know, if you have a tablet, you can just take a picture off the tablet and insert it directly from there, or your cell phone or an external camera. Insert the picture into OneNote and then make an audio note. So, and it's very easy to do in OneNote. To make an audio note, just go to Insert and then say Audio Note. So you just click on the picture, say Record, say something, you know, about your thoughts for the day about that particular picture, and then hit Stop Recording, and it's out there and in that section and things out there. But I think this is kind of a nice, intuitive template out there to kind of get you started with OneNote. It's just basically a digital three-ring binder. So you have sections across the top and pages across the right-hand side, and just kind of a good way to, if you've not ever used OneNote, it'd be a good place to possibly start there. So that's my pick, and I'll provide a link in the show notes for that. So, Mike?
Cool.
Mine's going to be more back in the security realm. We'll talk about ransomware. I suggested about malware bytes. It's a trial version that never really runs out. And it's good on top of all the other antivirus systems out there is that you download it. It doesn't have a continuous scanning option, but it'll go out and locate a lot more of the malware than the other systems out there. It's pretty powerful, especially if you have it on your machine and you're running it in safe mode. So if you have a pesky virus, something that's has screwed up your registry, or something that's very hard to get rid of, Malwarebytes is usually pretty good at getting rid of it. And it's just a better tool than Symantec and Microsoft Security Essentials, because I think it solely focuses on finding something that's already infected your computer.
And like the other viruses and things, they're constantly being invented every day, so you have to constantly get the updated list.
Right.
Now, is that something that you guys or ITS puts on our computers when we get them here on campus, or if we don't have it, is it something we can download on?
Yeah, you can download it. It's not something that's put on the computer, one of the university computers. But if we get a call or someone says, I think my computer's infected with a virus, that's something we'll run on the system.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's free to download. And it's also something like if we get a machine in because it isn't working at all, that's what we usually run to clean it up, as opposed to rewriting the whole image and the whole hard drive.
And will this work on our tablets and things like that?
It will, the Surface Pro, because it's Windows.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Android, I'm not sure that if they have a version for Android or not.
I'm not sure.
And I'm not sure about the iPads either on doing some things. Because every operating system's a little bit different. But you're starting to see, particularly in Android, more and more, because it's not as
a
curated.
Yeah, and Android's more the mobile. But I do think they have it for Apple and iOS systems,
mm-hmm.
If I remember right.
Yeah,
because a lot of those things now, when you look, it asks, when you go to the install or download, it'll have a whole list of the different operating systems and that. So,
okay.
Very cool.
Cindy, what do you have?
All right, well, I'm shifting gears completely. And that one, actually, I have 2 points. One is a point and one is a tech pick. So the point was, one of the things after the Oklahoma tornado that I thought was really interesting was a family or some guys that were doing a search and rescue mission found a camera in a hospital. And it had pictures taken that were dated that morning of a baby that was born and the family's first pictures together.
Oh.
And there was nobody around. And they found those pictures. They shared them on Facebook with people that shared them with other people and found that family. Hmm. Were able to get that camera and those photos. But I thought that, the good things that have come out of technology, things like that, or, different things with lost pets.
Yeah, I saw the lady with her little puppy dog.
Right, and there's a Facebook page. It's Illinois Lost Dogs, and people from all over the state, if they lose their dog, they post a picture, and then they post updates on there. And it's like, okay, so we go back and forth with this, how we worry about and don't want all this sharing of information and the spying or the watching and all
privacy.
We hear these stories in times of where it's such a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I think it's going to be interesting how we develop that balance.
Yeah. I think it'll always be a balancing act.
Yeah. Cause it's definitely about, I don't mind when there is a issue of concern, but when I'm sitting here and I don't want to be bothered, that's when it becomes an issue of a concern of privacy. But when I need it,
it's convenient.
It's kind of like insurance. You hate writing that check for insurance, but if you ever need it, you're awful glad that you did, you know? So, it's this constant weighing of the pros and cons of what we're doing and what we're developing and how things are changing. Mm-hmm. And, every once in a while we hear about, gosh, it's screwing things up because we have this technology, but then there are so many things that are being rescued and helped and improved.
Yeah.
From it too, and so it's just a really fascinating time we're living in right now.
It is
that we've got our hands on and we're a part of, and how it's playing out. So, but and then my tech pick was talking to some kids that live next door, and they were talking about their summer jobs and that, and I started thinking about kids and finance and understanding money, and so I found on themint.org. And it has a really neat, a couple of interactive things for kids to help them understand about saving and earning money and calculators. And so there was one that was, when will you be a millionaire? And you put in your, and if you go to that kids section, there's a kids section at the bottom of the page. And there's a, when will you be a millionaire? It shows how much you can put in each year and what the interest rate is. And how much you will earn. And so it's kind of neat to do that and see when will you be a millionaire. And so it lets you put in an annual investment amount and then select your savings options. And it's kind of neat because it introduces them to standard savings, CDs. Now, I don't know how accurate these interest rates are. I think they're probably a little better than what we're getting. But it lets you calculate. And so, they can see that if they think they want to be a millionaire, that they do need to be saving a good chunk as quickly as possible. The other one was the compounding calculator that talked about compounding interest.
Mm-hmm.
which I thought was really interesting because I don't understand compounding interest and that. So I thought, yeah, okay, during the summer, maybe not doing regular schoolwork, this is a great opportunity for parents and you know, child care providers to maybe talk with the kids mm-hmm. and play around with these things a little bit and just talk about, you know, this is how that works. This mm-hmm. is this is what you can be doing. And you know, if you really want that new Xbox mm-hmm. and that how you need to be saving. And so it's just it's neat information for kids. And there's also for tweens and parents and teachers, too.
That wraps it up for episode 151 of Tech Talk for Teachers. Show notes for this episode and archived episodes are available on the EIU Instructional Technology Center website at eiu.edu/itc. To leave a comment or suggestion, please send an email to techtalk@eiu.edu or leave a comment on the Tech Talk for Teachers blog. Until next time, this is Tom Grissom.
I'm Cindy Rich.
I'm Mike Joya.
Keep on learning.